Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. We are so pumped to bring on Kachina Kachina. You have seen his work, and if you have not seen his work, something's wrong with you. Go listen to this week's episode, and you are going to be floored. Hear his backstory, how he got to where he is. Hear how I one time huffed spray stuff, and I didn't mean to. But just hear about all that stuff. If you want to support Toys on Tap in a free way, you can jump on, like, subscribe, rate, review, wherever you get podcasts. It's a free way. We love you forever. If you want to support us even more, you can go on social media and follow us at Toys on Tap everywhere. If you want to follow us and jump on even more, patreon.com/toysontap. It's where more content comes, this week's nitty gritty, and so much more. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. No, there you go.
How's it going?
Good, good. No worries at all. If you're on your phone, can you do a horizontal turn for me?
Yeah, let's see.
Boom.
How's that?
We did it.
Nice. Perfect.
God.
Whoops. Am I in there?
Yeah, you're on it, dude. This is your episode. I'm pumped that you're on.
Nice.
It was cool. I got to meet you at DesignerCon, which was absolutely a pleasure. It's always weird in those contexts because you're like meeting so many different people and so many of us don't meet in person. And then all of a sudden when we do, it happened 3 or 4 times at DesignerCon where someone would say like, "Hey, it's good to see you." And I'd be like, "Hey, who are you?"
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of introductions and lots of reintroductions and so much overstimulation in every direction, right? So
absolutely.
People, every color that never existed, popping out at you and just wow.
It's wild. It's wild. But I am so excited that we met. And then it was before then I had reached out and or one of us had reached out and did the chum thing, and it's just a crazy, it was awesome. Your chum came in and 4 of the 5 immediately sold.
Yeah.
Just immediately. And so I'm pumped to have you on to be able to do this. And you've got new things cooking that I can't wait to hear about.
Yep.
And so, yeah, before we do any of that, I get too excited when I have people on that I absolutely like. So please explain who you are and tell us what you do.
Okay. My name's Dion. I go by Kachina Kachina. I am mainly a toy painter, but I design toys. I kind of started off trying to make resin toys, and I have a long history doing graphic design and branding. So I really kind of got into it by wanting to do like toys with packaging, you know, and how there's just like sort of a lot of the bootlegs play off of like cool card backs and stuff like that. So that's what got my attention pretty early on. And then I was just like, well, I kind of was like, I do graphic design all day long. I'm going to focus more on like different aspects of this.
Which is so rad. That covers so much of the toy industry's like art. Graphic design, toy design, painting, like you're crushing it.
Oh, thank you.
We have to start with the name because the name is, when you see it pop up, first thing I thought was like, oh, this must be a South American artist. Like, I don't know what Kachina means. Where's Kachina Kachina come from?
So for the most part, I'm a white guy. I got like a little bit of Native American genealogy back there, but like way back there, it's thinned out. But I grew up in Texas and had Southwest Native American influences all around me. Mm-hmm. My family from time to time would go to New Mexico, and then you get like the Pueblo Indians and the Hopi, and those cultures have these sacred dolls, their effigies, and the effigies themselves are kind of tied in. They're very spiritual. They're tied in with the long like history of their people, as far as like the Kachina apparently are our star brothers. They came here from outer space, from what I understand. You know, it's like Star Brother. And they're like, look, here's how you kind of manage things. And so they also believe in turnings of the world. Like, we have these different like stages that we've gone through throughout like the long evolution of humanity. And sometimes it's cataclysmic. And so these different entities have kind of helped us through these transits and times, and like kept our best interests in mind, and tried to like teach us how to do things right. And so,
yeah,
they the Kachina doll is a big part of their culture. And so they've always been so magical to me as a little kid. I've always kind of like wondered about them and had so much fascination around them. And to me, they all look kind of like, if a person that didn't understand technology tried to show someone like in a spacesuit or from outer space, and they have these different qualities and different characteristics, and they have different levels of teaching. So that's really where it came from, is just like my fascination with Southwest Native American art from since I was a little kid, and just feeling like a really like close identity with it.
I love that. I love that because it, like, some of us get stuck with names like Yucko Toys or Toys on Tap. And it, though it's fun and it has a meaning in the beginning, it's like, ugh, there's not really a deep part to it. But for you, it seems like there's something that's so entrenched in that name, which I love that you've embodied that you've taken that on and this is what you're into.
Thank you. And I also thought there was kind of a fun cultural tie as far as like the Kachina had big adventures. They could have been kind of like maybe the equivalent of how you have like the Hindu pantheon of Shiva and all the other guys that run around. There's like almost sort of like a super heroic, almost comic booky level to it from the way I take it in, right? And so it's like, oh, these other cultures, and they form kind of like, you know, I don't want to diminish anything, but when I look at it kind of with my Western eyes, I'm like, cool, that's like a action figure kind of. It's a like a sacred action figure, you know? And so they represent like, you know, kind of the way we look at like different things. They have stories behind them, and they have like a meaning behind them. And so, you know, I've got like a shelf of Kachina over here, and then I've got like some G.I. Joe over there, and like they're all kind of like have a similar space for me.
I mean, you've talked about like it's something that matters to you. What is one toy that you have? I mean, we're going to get into your backstory. I'm just stuck here for some reason.
No problem.
What is one toy or one maybe vinyl piece or something that you have that is your, like, that's the piece, that's the one for you?
Like just one that I've acquired through someone else, or like my super grail, huh? Gosh, that is hard. You know, like I'm a huge fan of Wanda Spoons and a huge fan of Wonder Goblin, and almost everything those guys put out, I'm just like, what level of genius is this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and so for me, it's like basically all their toys. And for the longest time, anytime Buona would have a drop, I'd be like, I kind of need that. And so, right, like I need a full collection. And so it's hard for me to pin one down, but, you know, like, gosh, the Budfoot is awesome, right?
Yeah, the Budfoot is really cool.
Like I've got a love of Squatches, and so like the Wonder Goblin Squatches and Bigfoots, the ETC space Squatches, like get out of town with that. They're like so big and can be painted and turned into so many things. They're like just such a expressive toy in its blank form, and then you can like turn it into anything you want. So you've obviously seen like the art shows that Tim and as ETC's put on, and it's just like so much creativity being able to be expressed through that one medium. So
I think I have, you've painted a couple space squatches.
Oh, absolutely. Correct? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I have one that you painted.
I think you do. Yeah. I might remember a mention or a show at one
the
point
small one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I do. I do. It's he posted, I'm addicted to his space squatch. I don't know why. I've told him, we've talked about it. No clue what it is about his figure that I'm addicted to. But maybe I don't have any of the blank small ones, but I saw the one that you painted and it was like, I'll take that one. And then I bought four of his, of the big ones because one is not enough. I don't know why I decided to buy four, but
they live in tribes.
Yeah. They have to.
Yeah, you can't have just a lone Sasquatch. That's right. How challenging. It's like guinea pigs. They need friends, right?
Yeah. I mean, Wonder Goblin produces some intense stuff. At one point, I want to have him on to kind of pick his brain about life. I mean, every once in a while, I think once a year or once every couple of years, I want to start having people on where they do multi-episode things. And so
fun.
One that I'm working on right now is Ron English one, who's going to have four or five episodes. So I'm excited.
That's awesome.
But Wonder Goblin's on that list. So if he's listening, there it is.
Yeah.
But walk me back. Your love for toys and your interest in toy design and artistry and all that stuff started somewhere. When you were a kid, tell me about the toys you grew up with, the ones you wanted most, all that stuff.
I'm an 80s kid, but I was born in 71. And so even when I was a real little kid, there were some cool toys that I remember. Right. And so there were the big, like 12-inch tall G.I. Joes. I remember having like a few of those and like a Jeep that they could all fit in. Right. So that was a big toy. That was like over a foot and a half or something like that. Right. Yeah. So there was a lot of that. There was a lot of superheroes, but kind of just like lame little one piece, like here's Superman, here like no articulation, Spider-Man type of thing, right? But
yeah.
I just always loved Spider-Man and Batman. And so like collecting was a little weird. Like not until Star Wars came around, right? I think did like our action figures for boys get cohesive, you know. Like I remember Micronauts, like those were super cool.
Yeah.
But I never had any. I didn't get Legos, I got Lincoln Logs. Right? We're gonna build some log cabins, right?
Yeah.
But like I that was all good though. Like I like to, I think like a lot of little kids like use their hands, build things, move it around, wreck it down, right? And so once the Star Wars figures came out, I had almost the entire collection from the first movie. I was so excited.
Awesome.
And one day they were in a bag. I went somewhere, I put the bag down, walked off for a second, came back, no more Star Wars toys. I was like, I was devastated. I still kind of have a tinge of that, right? Like, oh. So I kind of went without Star Wars toys for a while. Somewhere in there, like the smaller G.I. Joe toys came out. I remember like seeing those in the store for the first time and begging my dad to get Snake Eyes, right?
Yeah.
Like that was the very first Star Wars or G.I. Joe figure I got. And so like he got me that. I was super stoked. Ended up getting a pretty big collection of G.I. Joes. And then those guys went through some serious battle times and a lot of them lost arms and went through some
war.
It was war indeed. Not a lot of them survived. And then like for me, the crossover into like doing the art and painting toys started when I got a battleship model as a kid, had a lot of parts. And so my dad and I sat there and kind of meticulously follow the directions, which I think was part of the lesson they wanted me to do, is just like step by step and very methodically going through it and building this gigantic detailed battleship. And after that, I was just hooked. I'm just like, oh my God, I need models. And, you know, part of it was probably, you know, at the time the model glue was getting me high or something too, right? Like sitting there like in the room huffing these chemicals and the paint fumes. And
yeah,
but right around sixth grade or seventh grade, it was weird. I decided for some reason what I wanted to do as a vocation, as a job. Mm-hmm. So and this was like the 80s too. So there was this weird crossover of seeing all this design and cool posters and bright colors and lots of free organic forms. And a lot of it was airbrushed, right? Mm-hmm. Like if it was looking cool or looking chrome or, you know, trying to stand out, it was done by a pretty decent airbrush artist. And then I started hanging out with this dude and we started making model kits, and without even really realizing it, doing kit bashing. And okay. So we're taking parts from this and putting parts with that and doing a lot of like, sort of like, okay, we're going to recreate this little part of this one battle of this place where the Germans and the Americans fought. And we'd like set up a little scene, and they're, you know, based off the photo. Okay. It had a, you know, these dudes and this card over here is blown up. And so then we'd take that and take it down, like make a diorama and take it down to the model shop where we bought it. Right. Yeah. And those guys were like, I mean, it was like dudes probably in their 30s or whatever, but they were like, holy crap, you kids are geeking out. And so they'd put it in the case, like, check out what these kids are doing, right? And so there was just like, ever since then, it seemed like there's just been, you know, a little bit of toy collecting, focused toy collecting, and making models, like a lot of models. Immediately got shot with the BB gun, and the extra model glue got lit on fire. There's a horrible, tremendous crash with that airplane model I just built. But, you know, I think that's what really, like, it's weird to have been a kid and also painting up tanks with an airbrush at like, I mean, how old, like 11 years old or whatever, right? And so I got like a lot of familiarity with airbrushing toys early on.
I never did. So I hate, I've talked about this before, I hate models so much. I'm just, they're so, like, you have to be so good at that type of work, and I just wasn't as a kid. I wanted to go run around, and ADHD got the better of me, and the only thing I remember is hating those. And then I had an airbrush kit with it. And the first time, like as a little kid, the first time I realized I didn't want to huff paint or anything is I ended up, I thought it was just air in those cans. So I was like, oh, I could use, my brain was like, oh, you could use this in a pool or something. Like that'd be fun. So I like sprayed it and breathed in deep, and it
like
was
Freon or something.
Yeah, it was crazy. That like I chose to do. I don't, that was my first thing with airbrush.
You know, as far as a little kid making associations, I can see how you got from point A to point B.
Thank you. Cause it's, it's like can air. That's all I thought it was.
Yeah.
It definitely was not.
I got a tiny scuba apparatus.
Yeah. Over here. And it definitely was not. I just remember coughing a lot and like thinking this is the end.
Yeah.
That's cool. The way that you use the models and like shooting them with BB guns and stuff is very like reminiscent of the 80s and 90s. Like, we're going to build this. This isn't going on my shelf. It's going outside.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like, you did toys. You did what you're supposed to do with toys.
Yeah, there is the full spectrum of play, right?
Yeah.
I get to learn, I get to build things with my hands, right? I get to be creative and paint it up. And then, you know, as a boy, I just kind of want to smash things too, right?
Like you get to kill things.
Got a lot going on, so.
And so how long did this last before, I mean, sadly, we all kind of take a dip in toys every once in a while. And so how long did that last for you until you hit that dip?
Through middle school, I was kind of doing it. It'd taper off. You know, I was always like into toys in one respect or another, maybe not like collecting hard, but whenever I saw something that I liked, a toy, a game, something fun, like I was into it. At one point it transitioned into like tiny little railroad, right? Yeah. And now I can build little railroad houses. Like it's all kind of the same thing, right, to me. And so a lot of it, I think, had to do with a level of creative entertainment, right? Mm-hmm. And then also if I could buy something and it's cool and it sticks around, even better, right? So I guess like when I got into high school a little bit, like before that, I started doing athletics a lot. And so I was on the gymnastics team and eventually became the co-captain of the gymnastics team with my friend. And so that just took a lot of time. We'd be working out for like 3 to 5 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't a whole lot of time for other things. Video games kind of came out around then. And my dad is a European. He came over here in the 60s. And so his outlook on things were a little bit different. So we didn't ever have cable TV, weren't really encouraged to watch a lot of TV, didn't have video games. And so it's like my exposure through that was going over to other friends' houses. But I guess around really through high school, you know, is like kind of I didn't airbrush that much, did a whole lot of working out and competing and stuff like that. Just kind of, you know, that in school takes up all your time. And if you're lucky, you get a girlfriend in between some there. And so like, that was kind of it for several years. But then I went to college and I went there to learn graphic design. And so at one point or another, the airbrush came back out for a little bit. Right. And then, because it was at a weird place where computers actually weren't really that good to be able to do functional design on, right? Like, and the applications, like, I mean, maybe my sophomore year in high school, like, I'm not sure, like, I got exposed to one of the first Photoshops, right?
Yeah, so like late 90s.
Actually early 90s, right? Okay. So it probably would have been like 92, somewhere in there. And so like, you know, they hadn't even conceived of layers. There wasn't like that much processing power, but you could like scan in a photo and kind of arrange it and do things like that. But what's interesting is I'm kind of glad I hit it right at this point because
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now functional. Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters.
A lot of my educators and teachers were using old school methods that were going to go right out the window here in like a couple of years. Everything got replaced by computers, but I had to draw a lot of typography with my hand. I had to like do a lot of like the old rub downs and all the old ways, which involved like a lot of technical hand ability. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people are really taught that anymore. And so by the time I got out of college, I was using computers, but when I went in, there really wasn't that much exposure. It was like hand skills. And so I a lot of the times would look at myself as a graphic artist. And so I would make art, physical art, that then gets photographed and becomes part of the design, right? Mm. And that's always kind of the way I looked at it, is like more of an artist that uses that art in a design function.
Yeah. So I mean, 92, if perspective, I was 2 years old, maybe.
Wow.
And so the early, I mean, in middle school, I was still using floppy disks, but the reality of how early Photoshop was, I mean, by the time I was able to even use a computer, we were on Paint and whatever that was. But that's really early. And to like to have to make the digital graphics physical first and then start putting them on, that sucks. There's something cool about that, but that's like that's so much more work than having to just do it all digital.
Oh yeah, I mean, but there was no there's no comparison though, right? Right. There's no way to be all like, I mean, everybody's like, there must be a faster way, but at the same point, like, there's some benefits because everybody knew that things took time. Like, I couldn't just drop down typography. I had to like figure out my type and cut all the letters out, make all the little layout, and then take that to a shop where they would like photograph that as like a I can't remember what they call it, like it basically just be a black and white printout, right? Mm-hmm. But a photographic one. And then they'd take that and then they'd use it to make rub downs off of. And then you take your rub downs and you rub it all down. So it's like a tediously long process, but nobody's expecting three designs by the next day either. Right.
Right.
Like, oh, we'll touch base in 2 weeks on this. And so yeah, there was more room to think about it, more room to be creative, more room to like more time in between the steps to be able to refine. And so, you know, there's some pluses and minuses. Like, I'll just say maybe it's kind of incredible how much the world has sped up over the last few decades, right? So
yeah, it is crazy to see, like when I do get card backs done for certain projects, the artist that I work with, like, he's cranking these things out. Mm-hmm. And it's wild to see how fast he's doing it.
Yeah. And you know, it's all depends too, whether he's like, is he a digital artist or is he
does traditional? Both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, that's also a good sign of a level of skill and professionalism is you know what your tools are. You can actually produce a lot of art quickly if you need to. Right. And yeah, today that's kind of what we do. And so we have the tools to be able to really speed up the process and get our ideas out there. And that's pretty awesome also.
Yeah. And this is in high school, you said?
Well, that was actually my first years in college.
Awesome.
And so, yeah, so I was getting out of college. I graduated high school in 90. And so I went straight into college, got out of there in 94.
When you got, I mean, I'm assuming your degree is something art.
Great. It's graphic design. It's like a bachelor's of fine art or something like that is like, you know, whatever the degree is.
And so, in doing that and having that kind of a degree, what are the first jobs? Because they're not toy related probably. So what are those first art jobs coming out of college?
Yeah. So for me, they were really like, so one of the, like, had a couple cool apprenticeships. Like, one was at a place called Winterland Productions that was in San Francisco, and they used to make a ton of rock t-shirts, right? Mm-hmm. And so they do screen, like, high level screen printing. And so that was great. Like, I got to go in there and learn all the nuances of these people that were like working on a very professional level, creating like the concert t-shirts we love, right? And they were doing like with flat inks, making like very photographic like looking images, and it was all very fun, sometimes psychedelic. They do stuff for Madonna and like Beastie Boys were on their list and stuff like that. Like a lot of people that were touring through the different years, which is cool. Then I'd also work for like design agencies, like smaller design agencies. You know, throughout my career, I've worked for a whole lot of banks and like Visa and restaurants.
Yeah.
And at one point or another, I was making commercials. And so I made commercials with Regis Philbin and like just, I don't know, you know.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's jumping, like, it seems like your life is hitting every aspect of what a professional artist does, which is insane that you've gotten to dabble in each part of this. I mean, going through that, which one did you find that you were really gravitating towards the most?
Okay. So I like through the early work, and what got me really excited about things were posters, kind of still printed images that are impactful, right? I loved. And so like in our culture, that kind of translated to t-shirts, right? And so I loved working at the concert t-shirt place. Like those got a lot of sales, a lot of people wearing that design. And so throughout my career, when I have the opportunity, I like to make t-shirts, I like to make posters. I really like to make album covers. I've done a handful of album covers. I've, made a lot of friends that were musicians. And so for me, I really like to do print work. I've done a lot of digital work. It is a pain for me a lot of the time. I don't like programming and stuff like that. Mm. And I enjoyed making commercials. It was really wild to see that world. I probably only did it for like 3 years, but those were the biggest budget projects I worked on, right? So you make a commercial for like bagels, it could be like a $10 million commercial. You make like, you know, TGI Fridays was one of the clients for a while, and they would have huge budgets. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say what was most fun, but for me, like I always gravitate back toward like brand or print, like making logos for people and doing smaller jobs that like I think the individual themselves can like the business owner, we can talk about what the goals are and really just kind of like take their vision and make something really awesome that they're like branded, identified with.
Yeah. Right? So that collaborative like spirit is good to hear that you had it then, because you have it now in your paint collaborations and all that stuff. And
yeah.
So we're at this point where you're dabbling in all these things. When do toys start to kind of creep back in into this life of yours?
So, again, like I'd always be into like toys if I had a couple extra bucks. Star Wars toys coming home with me. Oh, wait. We got a like gumball machine with homies over here. Oh, hold on. We're getting some homies, you know.
Which are so expensive now, by the way.
Yeah, right. And so because a major part of like every time I go in a store with a toy aisle, I want to go to the toy aisle just to see what they're doing with the packaging, right? Because that to me was an exciting part of the toy. Like I've got toys like action figures I bought like 20 years ago still in the package just because I like how it's packaged up, not because it's ever going to be a great toy in its package, right? But then I think in 2001 or 2000, in 2000, I moved to Portland. There was a store here. I can't remember the name of it, but they would have art toys in there. I'd go in there and look at these like really detailed art toys. They got like fabric clothing, right? They're like 13, 14 inches tall, highly articulated. And then there were a couple of Ron English pieces in there too. And so I'm looking at those and kind of like, what, why is this toy cost like $80, you know? And like, what's going on with this? Why is this one $200 over here? And then I'd kind of come in and out of that store and I was just like, you know, I don't even care. Like I'm grabbing this like three-eyed blue bunny by Ron English. This dude's coming home. And so that kind of got me back into it. And so, as a kid, I was like, would watch a bunch of sci-fi stuff. And so cartoons would be sci-fi cartoons, Battle of the Planets, G-Force. Always, you know, it's like there was that thing in the 70s and 80s, there was just like so much sci-fi from, you know, I think there was like a King Kong release in there and like, Close Encounters, like all that stuff. And so I was just kind of really into like all the space and the sci-fi toys. And so there were a couple stores here in town that would also have like Star Blazers toys. Mm. And so I'd go in there and like look at these Japanese imports, and it's really interesting. Like Portland has like a handful of really cool toy stores, right? There's Dr. Tongs, there's Floating World, you know, Gravy Toys inside the comic book store here. There's Billy Galaxy. And so people that have like these very different collections just out all the time. And so I'd kind of, you know, I'd be downtown, got to swing by there and just look for nostalgia's sake, or just to like, how are these built back then? And like, I never remember like seeing this whole line of toys. Like I'm going to grab, like I grab some Ultramans and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Yeah.
There's a, I love going into toy stores, especially when, I don't know like the stuff about it. There's a place here called Book Off, not a toy store, but it was before I had encountered, Kaiju or Ultraman or any kind of thing like that. And I walked in there and they had this bin, because it's a, man, I don't know what, maybe Chinese or Japanese, whatever the store is, I don't know, but they have so much stuff in there. And it's like you trade in your stuff, you can get it, and then they ship stuff over from wherever they're from, and it's insane and it's really cool. And it's like a chain down here, and I walked in and they had a tub of Ultraman.
Oh.
And when you come in and you see a tub of this random character that's been produced in every way possible and in every style possible, and you just are looking through this, it starts to awaken something in you.
Yeah. And to begin with, you're like looking at an entire collection in a tub.
Yeah. Right?
And then you're like, which one of these am I going to get?
Yeah.
And that reminds me like when, and it must've been like 83 or 84. I have an older sister. And so, we would go to the mall and there was this store in there with nothing but Japanese imports and tons of toys and tons of Godzillas. And like, so we'd always like pick up little Godzilla things or little Ultraman things and just go, it's like the packaging they had and seeing all the kanji and like the colors and everything there. And it's like, here's a toy that's a sushi set, right? Yeah. Like what, why would you even have a toy like that? Like a tiny little, like a sushi eraser set, right? We gotta have some of those. And so like that really stood out to me too. Like when you get exposed to the toys from another country, right? Like the, like it's the same play, but with different figures. And it really is eye-opening, right? Like it awakens something for sure.
And just, I mean, one of the toys that kind of goes along with it that I see now that I want the full set is Bandai has started creating these gachapon or whatever, however you say it, little toys, and they have tortoises and turtles, but they're fully articulated and they're only this big, the legs and that go in, the head goes in. It's like they're painted like actual turtles and tortoises.
Yeah.
And I want all of them. And it's like, I don't understand why, but they're so cool. But yeah, it's like it's a different play into something that I would never find here.
Yeah. And it was weird too, like so I think, like, I don't know if kids anymore, like they probably don't play with guns a whole lot, maybe Nerfs, right?
Yeah,
like,
not as much.
There's no Cowboys and Indians going down, right? Like and also like I don't know, like I guess now there's becoming to be more of a level of fantasy play, right? But I've got like I like to collect whenever I see like those old like Native Americans are represented in toys. And so a lot of them are like from train sets from like the 40s and 50s, and some of them are like from the 60s. So I love to grab those. And also like there's this period where there were like all the knights. Do you remember that? Like
I do. On the horseback. Little... and then the ones that they look like army men, but they're just knights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like
hundreds.
And I never see those anymore. Right. But like that's such a nostalgic, like we're going to play medieval castle siege today. Right. Like,
yeah, you're unlocking things in my brain right now. So this is crazy.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait! Salvation! Hooray! We're saved, DLP2! Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys!
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures!
DKE!
Because, like, there was a time period where everything got printed like that. So it was like, I had Army Men, both this weird gray, blue, and green color, and then a tan. And then I had the Knights that were all, like, silverish. Okay. And then I had astronauts that were, like, this blue color.
Yep.
And then you just – I would play with all of them.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're going to the moon today.
Yep. And so, and it's interesting, like we're almost talking about two different types of toy though. So I know exactly what you're talking about in the small, like injection molded soldiers, right? These other ones that I was talking about, they were a little bit bigger. And they'd be like a lot more detailed, like hand painting going on, and like they'd be on, you know, you get a whole bunch of like pike soldiers and horses, and so they'd all kind of like have a little more mass and a little more density to them. Okay. But like what you just brought up too, like I totally remember that, because all the space guys, and those were like some really cool space figures too, right?
Yeah.
Like they'd all end up kind of in the same mix, and so you'd just have like different waves of like these different characters.
It's wild. The stupid scenes I would come up with. So you get that Ron English piece home.
Yeah.
It enters your collection, and it's kind of the first that awakens something different.
It is different, right? Because it really is more of like, to me, like a toy that is part of the pop culture, right? Like here's an individual that's a current artist that is expressing himself through this, I'd say new medium, but it's not a new medium. It just seems to be maybe a new artistic medium, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're moving into more of like a level of fabrication as an art piece that becomes something different. It's like a, you know, like a, it's like an art piece, right? It doesn't really have a lot of function, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, we see it, we like it. And you know, like this thing, it got in my brain, you know, like I went away and then I came back and got it, you know? So there's like, there was some period of time in between, like maybe I was just like, well, I gotta work for another week or wait till I get my paycheck or something.
Yeah.
Right. But like to get somebody to come back and act on that, to me is like that was a powerful thing for me, right? Like there's some level of importance to it that I can't quite like pin down, but that really was the beginning of my introduction into art toys and designer toys, and of like the new era that weren't based on like a previous IP, like Star Blazers or something.
Yeah, so what does that do for your, I mean, your collecting from that point? What does it do for what you begin searching for? What does that kind of change you?
You know, I think it really just kind of maybe like I can't really ever say my collecting gets too focused, right? like I just kind of like things and I get them, and so maybe there's a focus in the sense that all of a sudden that was the beginning of recognizing vinyl toys and starting to think about that and seeing like little galleries and places in town that specialize around this like more of a pop culture art expression. And so you know, I just kind of go to those places more and sort of start leaning in that direction. And there were several years, you know, I was still working a lot, and my life is just kind of like work, I go to the gym, I take care of my puppy dog, you know, I'm trying to spend as much time with my girlfriend as possible. And it's simple. I think a lot of people kind of do that, right? And so it's like, you know, when I could and as I could, I'd start to kind of develop that collection. But there were several years in between where it wasn't really specifically geared at that. And then I think in 2018, I made an album cover with one of my friends, and we came up with all these different ideas. And I wanted to like make a cast out of wax and then do stuff where the wax was melting in different ways. And that went sideways, but we ended up with this image of going like, well, we want to have this clear, crystally clear thing. And so it ended up where I researched how to do a pretty big resin pour, and we used alginate to like make a cast of his hand and forearm. And then I made like a light up sculpture that we shoved in the middle of that and dumped like a pound and a half of resin in there or something.
Yeah.
You know, like alginate and resin, like that's a water-based mold we're using, and putting like an oil-based like product in there, it went as you'd expect. It didn't come out crystal clear for a while. I had to do a lot of stuff to kind of get the water haze out of that. But
yeah,
ended up getting like a good cast, and it was a prop piece essentially is the way I was looking at it, and photographed that. But through the research of that, I was coming across these bootleg toys, right? And then also saw like some posts by Candy and Renji, right? Candy Bolton and Renji that used to make artwork. And like, I was like, whoa, like, what is this? Like, these people are kind of doing what I was doing as a kid, but more freeform. They're bootlegging these toys, they're painting them up, they're making card backs. Like, this is everything I love, right? Mm-hmm. And so once I really started looking into that, like in 2018, really started like buying some toys. In 2019, then I went to DesignerCon, and by that time I was making resin toys, so like doing sculpts and doing some resin pieces, and that kind of led to me making my first resin line. I'll show you in your camera here. So I did Time Benders, which is like
so a good.
little space dude, and like is like the Astro Zombie, but so those are like maybe 3.5 inches tall, have a little bit of articulation. I designed it where I could be like, okay, I'm gonna use their body as a primary vehicle, and then sculpt new arms every time, sculpt a new head, sculpt a new backpack, and sculpt accessories. And so I could focus my time on not having to make a new body every time, but little things that could go on that. And coincidentally, my new vinyl toy I'm coming out with is the vinyl version of Captain Dimitri that I just showed you. And so he's like sort of the Astro Zombie guy. And yeah, I'm excited for that. I just heard from Mad Monk that my molds got done. I just finished paying for my molds, and hopefully by January I'll have some pulls on that.
That's impressive. I mean, so going from early beginnings of like just trying to make some kind of a crystal clear thing,
yeah,
and then getting all the way to making toys. When you went to DesignerCon, did you booth at DesignerCon, or was it okay? So you were just there seeing everyone else, and you hadn't gone full blown painting like you're doing now,
yet,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, like, and going back to DesignerCon a little bit, like, right during that time, it was really kind of wild. Like, I hadn't really been on Instagram that much, and so all of a sudden, it's like I get introduced to Instagram, get introduced to art toys, and then looking up all this stuff, like, I'm looking at all these artists, they're making great art. Nobody's interacting with them, right? Nobody's shooting them messages. So I'm just like, hey, what's up, dude? Like talking to Skinner, talking to Buona, shooting Candy messages, just like, just having conversations with people. And so I got down the line a little bit, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to try and go to DesignerCon and meet these people in person and chat with them a little bit. And so that was a lot of the impetus to go there. And then, I was just looking back in my timeline, trying to kind of get a handle on timing. So that was the very end of 2019. Then we know how 2020 went, right?
It was perfect for everyone, right?
Yeah. If you like to stay inside and like hang in your basement and make art, it was a pretty good deal. And so like a lot of my design work came to a halt, and I was like, well, let's pour some resin, let's start painting stuff. So somewhere in there I got another airbrush. I was painting acrylic paint, and it's really super goopy and wasn't really set up to do any type of what I want to say, like the oil-based sort of like thinner type of paints, right? Because it's like the fumes are so intense. So I set up a little bit of a studio in the basement, ended up making myself a spray booth, pulled a window out and replaced that with a vent, and started like doing vinyl painting. Mm-hmm. Which is just like, I mean, it's super intense, right? So like the smells of it, or and like the fumes, you just gotta vent that out and wear your mask all the time. And so I guess right around 2020 I started painting stuff up, and then at the end of like early 2021 I think I painted some vinyl figures. Like I got some blanks from Buana and I painted a couple blanks here and there, and it wasn't collabs or anything. It was just me going like, well, what, how's this work? What can I do? I'm going to test out on these pieces. And they came out pretty good. Like I was like, oh wow, this, like, I still have my muscle memory from when I was a kid. Like I still understand how the airbrush and this equipment works. So there was like no ramp up time for me. I was just like, I'm in this. Like I'm like painting like I never stopped painting. Mm-hmm. Just using like kind of a different type of paint on a different material. And to tell you the truth, like I love painting how vinyl paint hits vinyl and cures so quickly. Like it's a dream for me. And the fact, like, you know, it's like I spent, had some, a lot of time under the black light in art school, right? Like I really enjoy UV paints and UV colors and black lights. And like this to me, all of a sudden, I'm like, all these elements, like kind of like the best, if I could make a buffet of all the things out of my life that I've really enjoyed the most, like this is it, right? Mm. Like I get to build stuff, paint stuff. It gets to look wild. I get to express myself. People actually value my expression and tell me that. So I'm just like, shit, like I'm going to keep painting. So toward the end of 2021, Elixir Toys hit me up to do a collab.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. And
I have like some of these pieces right here I actually want to send you. So,
oh, great. And yeah. So, yeah, like, I mean, I absolutely love Mac. Like he's such a great guy. And he was like, let's try this. And the first collab came out great. And I was looking at it just on the on my Instagram feed the other day and trying to see like the next set of Fungustings I painted after that was these Krampus ones, right? Mm. And for Christmas. And so they've got like all sorts of wild hair and resin horns and eyeballs, and are just like, to me, like I look at that and I look at a lot of my work. It's weird because it's like I found myself just in this almost continual state of painting now. I get stuff out at such a high volume and so much often, like I have trouble kind of like completely associating with it. And so I look at it from almost like a third party point of view sometimes. I'm like, oh, that's pretty freaking cool. Like that's like can hang, you know?
Yeah.
And so to me, I was kind of like, wow, I didn't realize like what a kind of rapid progression I made in my skill levels with painting up toys. And then Mac and I just had releases every other week for a year and a half or more, which was kind of pedal to the metal on stuff. And so I'd be doing my design stuff, and every little second I could, I'd get down there and paint. And then after work, I'd go down there and probably paint till like 2 a.m. And then, so I'm self-employed as a designer. So I kind of set my own hours. And so I'd be up in the later morning again, doing more graphic design and just graphic design and painting. And I really, really appreciate Mac giving me the opportunity to like start painting those, because we did so much so quickly, and having between us come up with so many ideas, like it just created a bonfire of creativity. So
yeah. And it's, I mean, what a great figure. I'm assuming it's Fungusting when you started. Yep. And then by the end, probably Fitgusting had come out yet. Or no?
Oh yeah, Fungusting, Thickgusting, the Seers, and then really toward the end, I think the last figure that he released was the Tusk, right?
Yeah, Tuskarian.
And so he took a break not too long after that, and so you know, we kind of partnered up throughout that whole deal and just painted and released a lot of, I think, really cool toys. And of course, like, he's the brainchild behind all the actual toy itself, and he partnered with Ryan and Motley Miss Creations, I think, did the 3D rendering on those. But, you know, like, Mac approached it from a really interesting business perspective, and he formed a team of people around him that were invested mm-hmm. into doing a good job, and he compensated everybody well. You know, we all agreed on, you know, things. I mean, I don't really know what they agreed on, but between Mac and I, like, he was easy to work with, and I like to do the work and deliver. And so it was just a great partnership.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about the partnership stuff, 'cause I think that's so important. I think, as a soapbox moment, like, people need to pay people.
Oh yeah.
Like, they have to. And so, I mean, he had posted something that things were taking too long and people weren't paying him and stuff. And it's just so easy. I just, like, when those Chum came in, they released, they sold. That night, it was like, what's your PayPal? I need to get this money to you. Because the longer I hold it, the more likely I am to forget that you
absolutely
get money. And
that's the way I feel.
And it's just this weird dynamic that if I'm an artist or if I'm doing something that revolves around art, I should have every bit of knowledge to the fact that another artist did this. And I need to care for their time and stuff and get you guys paid.
Yeah. And I feel the same way. And there might be a level of anxiety in it for me, but yeah. It's like, maybe that anxiety is going, like, I want to make sure these people, like, my relationships stay good. And
yeah.
And I want, like, what to follow through on the agreement. Right. And I also want to cross stuff off my list. So yeah. I'm like, cool, we got paid. I crossed that off the list. You got paid. We're all good. Everybody's happy. There was actually, I had one event where I did some stuff with Strafe 7. He painted up some of my figures and they sold, and I went to go pay him and then got distracted and then totally forgot. Like, he had to hit me up. I felt so bad. I'm just like, oh man, that sucks. Right. Like,
yeah.
To leave somebody hanging. But like, so I kind of get both sides of the coin, right? But for the most part, like, you know, I really like to stay on top of it when I owe people money. And, you know, it also is like, a lot of times we'll pay and then make an agreement to do the next thing, right? Mm. And I think everybody I've ever worked with, thankfully, there's never been an issue with it. And we just do all these, like, handshake agreements, right? Like,
right.
No contracts between us. And I have heard, you know, that sometimes people in the industry might be difficult, right? But I've even encountered maybe some of these difficult people, and I have, like, a good time with them. Like, I enjoy everybody for the most part. And, like, I figure, like, everybody that I've worked with has been above the board and been on top of it and been interested in doing the right thing. So I guess I've just had, like, a really, really excellent time in the toy community and working with people and collaborating with them.
Yeah. I think, I don't know. It's always handshake. I think if it got to where someone's doing 10 to 20 pieces for me, let's do some kind of a contract so we can figure sure. out. But, I mean, we did 5 and it was just a quick, it's crazy to me that people, can forget so quickly that they are also an artist.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's so wild. Tell me, I mean, we saw, since then DesignerCon has happened and we got to stand and talk in front of Barbarian Rage's booth and got to hang out for a little bit. And I mean, it's such a hard place to talk and hit because it's so loud in there and there's so much going on. And we're like geeking out because Shepard Fairey's on the other side, or like whatever was happening on the other side, and all kinds of stuff. But we got to hang out for a little bit. I immediately wanted you on the podcast, and we talked about the reality of you have a toy coming out.
Yeah.
So tell me all about this toy. We talked about the resin one, which was a double cast, correct? Because it was the skull inside the helmet.
Yep. And so go ahead.
Well, tell me how this new, because it's the same one just in vinyl now. So tell me about this figure.
Yeah. And so this is one of the first things I actually wanted to make when I started doing vinyl. So I actually have one vinyl figure out already. Okay. And so like I did a lot of research and tried to talk to a bunch of experienced people. Buona was really, really nice to make some time and talk to me a couple times and like give me his perspective and share some knowledge with me. And so this is one of the first things that I talked to him about. He was kind of like, I don't know, man, like that looks kind of hard because it has like a clear dome that attaches weird. And he's like, maybe you want to start with a little bit more of like a simple project. Mm-hmm. And so after I did that, I've still been looking at this. And so I made my first toy, wanted to make his friend. And so my sculpt didn't really work out that well as far as production goes. They wanted to break it up in a bunch of different ways, which is like more pieces, which is more money. So I'm like, all right, I want to put a timeout on that and come up with another sculpt. And so I went with essentially what was my first resin toy in vinyl, Captain Dimitri, the Russian cosmonaut. Yeah. And so he's a detailed skull with some headphones on, because he's got to have his music. He's got kind of a classic spacesuit. And part of the tricky part of the engineering of the toy is how do you get that clear dome, right? With Sifubi, their tolerances, right? And so like the thicknesses of things don't seem to always be 100% the same. And how do you connect piece A to piece B? And so I worked on it for a while and would send some models to Mad Monk and be all like, so can we produce this? And it'd be all like, nah, I don't know, dude, like you have to make a couple changes. And so, but to me, I'm, you know, again, I'm used to working with people in the manufacturing process and want to like make things to where they're, they reproduce well within the manufacturing process. So what happened is it took different proportions from almost like an action figure. I squatted him down and now he kind of has like Motu proportions, right? Mm-hmm. His legs are a little squattier, he got a little wider, he's got a bigger torso, and he's real muscular. And so I'm super excited, like you know, I saw the waxes and I actually pinned those up at the top of my Instagram feed, and so if you're interested you can check those out. But the waxes are looking really good. And then the molds just got done and we're going to have, you know, my vision to begin with, I'd love to have 50 regular, just glow in the darks. Cause I like to paint over what's almost that white color, the glow in the dark, and the paints pop really hard off that. And then kind of like, if I can get a glow orange, and I kind of go with sort of like work off the orange base for a little while. And then I'm thinking, as far as the helmets go, half of them be glow in the dark helmets and then the other half be clear helmets. Yeah. And so that gives like a lot of, I think, opportunity and possibility to swap out helmets. And I'm just kind of a sucker, anything with a dome, clear dome, and sci-fi and astronauts and the whole thing, right? Yeah. Like ever since I was a kid, I'm like, this is like, I love outer space stuff and the whole like outer space fantasy vibe, right? So yeah, that's essentially what we're doing. Like I'm excited. Hopefully by January I'll have some pulls to work with and show off and like just a new toy for people's shelves.
Yeah. I mean, Mad Monk, I'm assuming, works with factories in China. Or Japan?
Yeah, I mean, China.
China.
So, yeah, he's all China. And I don't know 100% what his connection is, but it seems like he's real close in with the factories. And so yeah. he's seems like he's like in direct contact with them all the time. And I just don't know his actual, if he's employed by them or exactly what the story is.
But my assumption is that he is on a mad dash because Chinese New Year's coming up, and so it's like we're racing to get this like Godzilla-esque piece out as well, because they it's like it's come, I think, what is it, it's in March or February, I can't remember what month it is.
I think it's in March.
Okay,
I could be wrong, it could be late February. Well, it always seemed, I don't know, somewhere in there, maybe.
But right, like right, factories go down and
yeah,
And so it's just it's always interesting, I think, learning the production side of things and trying to plan out the year. It's just, if you don't start in November,
yeah,
that toy's not coming out until after Chinese New Year. Yeah. Like, you got to be really cranking.
Yeah. And also too, like, this is like the Sofubi process for me. Like, having timing expectations is just a good way to get frustrated, because like this has been there for months. Right. And to me, I don't think that's unusual, but there's been a process, and there's also been like, we have to redesign some pieces. And to me, that's just part of the process, but you know, like it always takes a little bit longer. I always have to like work on my patience a little bit and just understand that like there are different timelines for different productions, right? So I'm just excited when it gets done. I mean, honestly, my goal for this year was to have 3 toy releases, and I wanted a table at DCON. And so my first release, I had to put on hold because I didn't design it really well. My second piece then kind of languished in the factory, you know, swirl for a little bit. And so it's like, all right, you know, that's not going to happen. It's nice to have ambitious plans. I got, you know, some more pieces. I work in Nomad now a little bit. And so I'm like coming up with my next toy model in there. And so it's just, you know, we're like, there's my ambitious timeline, and then there's the timeline of reality, and somewhere in there, toys are going to be made, right?
So. Yeah. I mean, it's cool that that's happening. I'm glad that you have another piece coming out. I'm excited. Anything that has like a clear dome. I'm a sucker for clear. It's like clear, some kind of a light blue or a like electric green. Those are the 3 colors I'm a sucker for when it comes to
nice
Sofubi. I don't know why. It's like, I think I have a couple. I mean, I have Barbarians.
Oh, here. Nice. Yeah.
The clear. And it's just such a fun piece. I don't know what it is about clear that I'm into. And so, like, coming out, are you getting ones painted? Are they coming to you all blank and you're taking care of all the paint?
So what I'm thinking is I'm getting them all blanks. And and that's what I've done with my other figure. I'll show him to you. You might be familiar. It's Sunny.
So good.
He's a little Kachina guy. And so I've gotten 100 of these made up, and I've been painting them in like sets of 5. I like to do kind of small limited editions of stuff. And so that's kind of what I plan on doing with these new Astro Zombies. But like, I'd really like to do stuff that like Tim does, and have like a show with like 10 or 15 people and see what their take on it is, right? Mm-hmm. And just kind of like more involve a larger group of people that like to paint and like to customize. Put it out there and let's see how weird it gets. Let's involve more people and just kind of make the game a little bit bigger, right? So it's fun, right? And playing with your friends is fun. So that's just kind of my vibe, right? That's where I want to go with it.
You know, when he does those shows, I'm always floored by the paint jobs and all that stuff. What is her name? Donner Don't Care. When she jumps in.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how, that's a good explanation for her work. Like how?
Yeah. Well, patience and skill and trial and error, right? Like I think Dawn likes to experiment, and she likes to win, right? So she's going to kind of get in there and figure it out and make a good product. And I've got one of her Skeletor Care Bears. Mm-hmm. And she got a couple of my pieces a while ago. So I've known about her for a while, but like all the hair she does, oh my God, like the rainbow colored Squatch she did a while ago.
It's just so mind
blowing.
So
yep. Yeah. And to me, like I've got one of these Squatches that I did. So Tim asked me if I do a Kachina theme, right? And so I ended up doing like real fur, real feathers, like making little jewelry for it and going all out. Like at the end of the day, Like, I'm like, okay, I probably got like 100 hours in this. Like, yeah. What the hell? And it's like, I wasn't painting it with the idea that I'd actually get my money out of it. I was painting it to be like as perfect as I can make it and honor like how cool it could be. And I think Dawn works the same way. Like, and a lot of us, I think we're either obsessive about making it awesome or just want to make it awesome and then come out with a piece that ends up whatever it's for sale for, the actual piece is like values a lot more than that. Right. Yeah. So, and I see that, like, I mean, the last, what was it? Enos of the Retroverse or something that. Yeah. Like some of those customs were insane. Like people like making 3D printed, like full blown sculpts over the vinyl. Like to me, there's just so much amazing talent out there and so much creativity. Right. And that's one reason why I love the toy space so much is the people don't disappoint and they are eager to do something badass. And it's always like jaw dropping. Yeah. So
that is crazy. With the stuff that happens this year, and I mean, going into next year and the new toy and all the stuff, tell us about some of the stuff that we're hoping for with this year, like how many toys you want to release, what goals, what collaborations you've got coming up, all that stuff.
Okay. Well, so a little bit of fantasy, a little bit of dreaming. What I'd like to do. So technically, I think this next toy is going to have a 2005 release probably in January. And so that'll be the first one. That'll be a really good way to kick the year off, I think. Hopefully in the next few months, I can dial in my next toy, which is going to be kind of like a plan to be sort of like a weird animalistic gnome type of guy with like maybe a mushroom hat, like maybe swappable caps. So we'll have like your traditional gnome hat or like a little mushroom you can put up there. And then, so that would be like three original toys that I have in my own library. And then Mac and I were talking about maybe trying to do a show toward the end of the year. It's hard to say if we could do it, but at least like kind of like putting a fantasy of like double boothing and like having a lot of painted up toys there. Right. So I don't know the reality of that. And again, it's like would be I think just like a really cool like thing to put on the calendar and work for. And you never know what the year is going to offer up, right? Like I had more ambitious plans for 2004 that didn't work out. And like, again, I'm kind of down with that though. Make the plans maybe more than you can actually achieve. And in the way you'll still achieve a lot of them. Right. And so I'm just interested in doing that. And then I've got like a large list of commission jobs right now. And November was huge for me. November and the end of October, people contacting me, like maybe two or three people a week, wanting commissions, wanting like two or three toys. Let's collab on stuff. So I also did some like collabing at Decon with Dollar Slice and did some big rad wolves. And so just twice a week, three times a week, I get like a box of toys. And so my studio downstairs has just got like a double line of toys all lined up. Some people like have me painting like five toys for their personal collection. Other people are like, hey, I'm going to a show. Like I got somebody that's going to a show. What is it? Assembly Required, right? So I'm going to paint some stuff up for that. And so it's, I think just like I'm eager to collab with people. I'm eager to do commissions with people. People seem to really be appreciating the way I'm painting stuff up. I love to do detail and my prices are generally pretty good. Like insanely complains. Good. So thank you. So yeah. So just more of that, like more making connections with cool people, painting, meeting people, releasing toys and like trying to enjoy life, you know?
Yeah. Well, dude, I mean, it's been such a pleasure having you on. I mean,
thank you.
I can't say enough good things about your work and your work ethic and just your joy and passion that you bring to the toy scene. I it's It's contagious.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I mean, obviously all you do, like you're a very cohesive force, right? And I love Toys on Tap because like I have interactions with a lot of people that have been interviewed by Toys on Tap, but I'm not really talking to them about their childhood or wondering what their process is, right? Like we're talking about current jobs. So I love to actually go back and be like, I know these people on a one level, but now I get to hear their story and it's inspiring to hear where people are coming from. And it's interesting to say like, oh, I've got a lot in common with these people and a lot that is just like so unique and original to them. Like it's amazing to hear everyone's story. So thank you for the work you do.
Oh, you're too sweet. I know you have a long list of collaborations and stuff coming, but if people want to reach out to you, this last part of the podcast is to plug all your stuff. So as close of a release date of your new toy, how they can get in touch with you, all that stuff.
Cool. So again, hopefully, fingers crossed, January, I'll have toys in hand, be painting up some releases. You know, Instagram's really where I spend most of my time. I'm never on Facebook. So just hit me up on DMs. And also, if you want to know stuff about painting, I talk to people about that all the time. I'm really open source. I've got a philosophy like the more we all know the same stuff, the more we're going to innovate new stuff and the more we're going to make cool stuff. Like everybody's got their same expression. It's all going to come out different. So I'm happy to talk, hit me up. You know, you want a custom, let's do it. You want a collab, let's do it. I'm open. Let's have fun.
Heck yeah. We're going to jump into the nitty gritty. We didn't have one last week. We get one this week.
Cool.
Extra 10-15 minutes with the artist. But let's close this one out. Thank you so much for having on.
Thank you.
Coming on Toys on Tap.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you.